Welcome to Unleash Your Courage. This is your host, Angela Schroeder. Whether you're joining us live on Turfs Up Radio, on Facebook, or by recording, thanks for being here. And so excited to welcome this week's guest, Eric Kelly. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Angela.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just met Eric in this last year. You're one of the first people that I met when you were at my table at a mastermind in Nashville and expanded my thoughts and amazing energy from the beginning. So I've loved learning from you and excited to hear about all of the changes and stuff. So instead of me telling your story, I'm going to have you just tell the audience about you and your story and whatever you want to share with us.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know how much time I have to talk about that, but one of the things I've learned best in life is the less you talk about yourself, the more people wonder about you and engage in more conversations. So a little bit about myself. I spent a majority of my adult working days in the military, spent time overseas. And when I got out of the military, I was born in Canada, but I've spent my entire adult life in the United States. So we decided to move back to Canada to be close to some family, let the kids be near their grandparents. And somehow I fell into being a business owner. It was really happenstance. And I started window cleaning, of all things, because there was a very low barrier to entry and I didn't have any money. So it was actually a really good fit. Best piece of advice I can ever give someone starting a seasonal business is don't quit your job and start a seasonal business in December. Really bad idea. I quit my job Christmas Eve. I was a project manager at a construction company. And I was like, I'm going to do this, and realizing there's no window cleaning in December. So that was a really bad idea. Fast forward a couple of years, our company grew. We got into exterior lighting and a couple of other things. And then in this past year, I've really shifted gears in what I'm doing. I'm now primarily in an integrator role. I exited my home service companies, and it's been a really interesting change. We up and moved from Canada back to the United States. We live in Dallas now. We love life here. I love the heat, except for this cold snap that we just had. But overall, we got here this summer, and it's been the best thing that we've done.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about the new integrator role. I was just saying, as we were getting set up, I am coveting your background. I absolutely love your new logo. So tell us.
Yeah, I was going to get my hair done too. I don't know. That's a little bit new. You've known me long enough. This is a little new for me. This is not, but this is new. It wasn't just due to the heat. One of the things that I've been trying to do as we've move down here, it's a new level for me to step into. So I call it 3.0. Business ownership was 2.0 for me. 3.0 is a whole new thing. So down here in Dallas at Warplan Studios, that's where I'm filming this. This is a project of Josh Latimer's, and I get the opportunity to be a really good integrator and operations specialist here. And the nuance that I bring to that is my background in home service helps me understand our clients better. But also my leadership experience from the military really helps me with the team here.
Awesome. So tell me more about, so many people are talking about, we're going to dive into your story, but I'm just fascinated, like I said, with the now, and then we'll go backwards. But tell us a little bit about Warplan Studios and what you do with people. It is all the buzz now, and I feel like I'm feeling a lot of FOMO that I haven't come yet.
Well, you're always welcome. Just hit me up. But at Warplan, we fundamentally believe that small business is the backbone of America. We believe in small business owners. We believe that they should be equipped with the knowledge and the tools that they need to succeed in the marketplace, in their markets, in their industries, without having to go too far outside their own business. Primarily, what we focus in on is the art of marketing. We also focus on the science of marketing, and we believe in accountability and implementation. So that's the buzz that you're hearing. We have a whole new project that we've been working on for the last year that will be coming out soon. And we're super excited about it. You know, there's sometimes when you work on a project for a while, you get kind of numb to it and you're like, oh yeah, that's cool. Not me. Our entire team is abuzz because we understand how important this is and what it's going to do for people.
I love it. Well, I'm excited to hear more about all of that to come. There is quite the buzz, and I love your mission of that small business owners are the background, and how awesome that, because nothing ever gets old about that, right? That's what I love most about what I do, is helping other small business owners succeed. And you get to be part of a project in doing that every day.
Yep. Yep.
So that's awesome. Well, like I said, I met you at, you know, I was walking into this new world of not in the home service space. And it really was one of my first experiences going to a mastermind in Nashville with all these people in the home service space, kind of like, what am I doing here? Talk about that on the show. And we just had that mastermind is full of great people, but we had a great table. And just every time we've had a conversation, you always make me just think in such a new way and such a new thought, that I love that. It's not just here on the path. You're like, what about this? And so just know, like, I love that about you in conversations. I always know that I'm going to walk away thinking something completely different.
Yeah. One of my things that I believe about conversation is good for both parties, but both parties need to give and both parties need to learn. One of the best things that came from my time in that mastermind is learning the art of gestalt communication, where you speak from your experience, not what you read in a book, not what you heard someone else say. While that stuff might be valuable for you to dig in on your own and implement, speaking from your own experience gives you a nuance in being able to explain it in such a way that someone might be able to understand better. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that is. See, I'm writing that down. That makes me think a new thing too. A lot of times we talk from ideas, but you did share from experience and what it was like for you to step away from that home service business, what it's like to pass it on to the new person. So talk a little bit about that, what it's like what it was like to shift from 2.0 to walk away, you know, to build a business and then step yourself away from that. And what excites you about stepping into reinventing and stepping into 3.0?
A lot of it has to do with what your identity is wrapped up in. So if your whole identity is wrapped up in you being a business owner, it's going to be much harder for you to extricate yourself from that. For me, I stumbled into business ownership. I really was. I was just really broke and I needed to make money quick. And somehow I fell into that pattern. But I never stopped working on myself, my failures, my flaws, my strengths. And I came to business ownership with a lot of external strengths. I already had a career as a project manager. I had all my military experience. I had my schooling done. And that allowed me to frame out the other parts of my identity. And it's not that I never didn't consider myself a business owner at all. So when I left, I always decided I would move on from business ownership. And I might go back to it. I always have an idea brewing in my head. But I always said that if I was going to move away from that, I had to be moving on to something bigger and better. And I always think there's this process of being the learner, being the apprentice and being the master and being the learner. You know, you go back and forth when you move into a new space. So primarily I get to be exposed to other, not just home service business, but the info business, brick and mortar, a lot of different business spaces. And I know nothing about those and I get the opportunity to learn about them. And I think that's really important. So I always said I was going to move on to something bigger and better. So when you're moving on to something bigger, it really helps you go, okay, this was good. I'm going to put myself back in a smaller position to learn, you know, and create that growth opportunity for yourself. Not that, you know, owning a business, there's always way more I can learn, 100%. But completely leaving that, and it's been exciting for me. I call it drinking from a fire hose.
I bet it is in all of the new things. Mm-hmm. You did such a great job. I mean, and this is clear back almost a year ago that we were at that mastermind. I've talked to you, well, maybe over a year ago, or I guess almost a year ago.
It was about a year, yeah.
But you were kind of, not in the beginning, but still in the midst of passing off. Mm-hmm. And just, I thought, like, it's everything that you described about that growth. Like, you were so aware of your personal growth and what your role was in reflecting. I think I see so many business owners like take a step away or, you know, want to be try and take that step out of their business, and either that their partner or the integrator in their business is really running the business, but they're not really stepping away. They're not doing it powerfully and letting the integrator. And you just had this level of awareness, I guess, and were vulnerable about that awareness of what it was like to step away. Like, oh, I maybe needed to not be involved in that conversation so that people didn't see me as the leader. But just, it was, you were so vulnerable in talking about that. And it was great seeing you go through that. I learned a lot about the areas in, even though I wasn't stepping out of my business, maybe areas that I was too involved, so that I wasn't letting the leaders be leaders because I was too hands-on.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot to it. When someone says, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to delegate it, you have to be willing to let it fail. I think that was part of my attitude at the time, was I have to be willing to let this fail, or I might as well not give it up at all. Right. And often when someone steps back, you're literally like letting your child walk on their own 2 feet across the living room for their first time. And those of you that have kids, like, that's a really exciting experience. But then 50% of the time, your kid grows up with a scar right here because they hit their head on the corner of the coffee table, my youngest son included. But you have to be all in on the risk. Some people are all in on not wanting to do it anymore, but they're not all in on the risk. And the reality is you can empower someone to do something or even run your entire company and they can burn it to the ground, but it's the risk you took. You have to be all in on the risk and just know when you're going to pull the fire, you know, escape cord.
Oh, that's an interesting way of putting it. You know what that risk threshold is, when you're going to pull it out, but unless mm-hmm. you are all in on the risk of like, I'm going to let you go this far into failure.
Mm-hmm.
And without that, I didn't think of it that way. See, another new frame of thought. I just saw like, wow, I cannot empower my leaders. They're not really looking at the leaders as leaders if I'm constantly stepping in mm-hmm. as the leader.
Yeah. But the risk. Yeah. And it confuses the employees really, because if you've empowered a leader, it's like, okay, you can go to them for this, but you still come to me for this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's an issue that blends both areas. And if they don't really know it, they go, well, do I talk to mom or do I talk to dad? Mm-hmm. Right. And you're not co-parenting with your GM or your integrator or whoever you have running it. You're not co-parenting the company, right? One of you is not parenting the company. I take everything back to parenting, because it's one thing I've really tried to invest a lot of my time into learning, is leadership has a lot of parallels in parenting. So when you co-parent a company, that's like having a partner, right? You're both invested 100%, not 50-50. You're both invested 100% to see the success of your company grow and leave on its own. But when you empower someone, it's kind of like getting, what's the best analogy? Like if you had to go away for 6 months to do something, it's like getting a nanny or a caregiver or some sort of foster parent to take care of your child, your company. You can't do it, right? Because if you do it, you might as well have done it yourself. So yeah, you have to be all in on the risk. And even if it does crash and burn, you took the risk. Like, that's why we start businesses, is we take the risk. Risk is not uncommon to us, but the reason why we don't do it, because if you think about it this way, you're leaving your business into the care of somebody else. It's mm-hmm. like starting a new business of not having a business. That is your business, is not getting involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I love that analogy to parenting too. Like you said, if you're co-parenting, then you're co-parenting. Like, which mm-hmm. is it? Are you running yeah. the business with a partner and you're running the business together and we know our own roles, just like when you're co-parenting? But if you're not and you are trying to step away, you can't be in that role, or people get confused. I run to mom and I run to dad. But the parenting mm-hmm. analogies are good because they work. Yep. Well, we have to take our first commercial break and we'll be right back and dive in some more.
Perfect.
True Fuel is a high-octane fuel precision engineered for your 2 and 4 cycle equipment. They use the most advanced synthetic lubricants and stabilizers in an ethanol-free fuel, improving performance, protecting your equipment, and saving you time. That means easier startups, smoother idling, and quicker trigger response, plus extended life for all of your equipment. True Fuel is ready to use and easy to store, helping your operations be more efficient and reducing maintenance costs. We at Turfs Up use True Fuel because we know it works and we know it's the best option. Check out TrueFuel50.com to learn more. That's TRUFUEL50.com.
You're listening to Turfs Up Radio, the only radio station of its kind dedicated to the green industry. Now you can even ask Alexa to tune you in when you're home.
Are outdated spreadsheets and whiteboard scheduling costing you jobs? Or is a lack of consistency between crews causing your bids to differ from job to job? Or worse, delaying critical invoices and payments? Crew Control offers all-in-one business management solutions fit for every trade. From bidding and scheduling to invoicing and integrating payments, Crew Control provides real-time visibility into your crew's efficiency, whether you're in the field, in the office, or even on vacation. Manage your crews more effectively and improve business performance with Crew Control. Start your free trial today at crewcontrol.com.
From the East Coast to the West Coast and around the world, here's to all the women in the green industry. Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station.
And we're back. So next, I want to dive into this integrator role. I'm fascinated. I probably should have known that you were had integrator tendencies, integrator strengths, but I talk a lot about this. I've had a couple shows on visionary versus integrator and the relationship of that. I've learned a lot about it in the last year of working better, like I said, of being able to let go of that. I am a super high visionary, but I don't think until I spent so much time, Dalkey had at the mastermind really spent so much time this year showing us a good relationship with an integrator. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were such a strong integrator. Does this come from military experience, project management experience? Are you high in both?
So it's interesting you say that. So I read that book for the first time about 5 years ago, and okay. I took the test and I scored a 93 as a visionary and an 87 as an integrator. And I was like, this can't be right. Right. You got to be one or the other. Cause that they made it seem black and white. And for the most of the population, it is black and white, right? You have a strong set in one and not the other. And every year I took the test, just, I'm like, maybe I lied. Maybe I was just thinking I was a visionary or, you know, all these, and I took it every year and I tried to be as honest as possible. And I only varied by 1 point each year. So sometimes it was like 92 and 88, you know, but it only varied by 1 point in each category. And I started doing research on this, and nobody talks about this, but I did find a interview article with the author, and the interviewer, I think this is where I found it. They asked, like, what if can someone be high in both? And he said, yes, but it's less than 5% of the population. That's why they don't even address it, because it's so subset. I tend to think that I improved my integrator skills through my time in the military. Because you always have to be an integrator to a degree, depending on what your rank is. You're always an integrator to someone above you, and you're a visionary to somebody below you. And we have this thing in the military called the commander's intent. And I was enlisted, so the commander's an officer, and he'll say, okay, I want to do X, Y, and Z by this time. And then that's it. And it's up to the lower levels to plan and execute it. And as long as the commander's intent was reached, then we talk about, did we do it really well, or did we do it really poorly? And as you get into more, organizational psychology books and things like that, the concept of the commander's intent comes up a lot. Actually, it's a very interesting thing to study. I'm a really good integrator because of that. My project management degree really, and my time there helped me with that as well. But the benefit for me is I get to spend time with my visionary, and I am able to understand what he's saying at a much higher level.
Yes.
So I get to translate. It's not just an integrator goes, okay, explain that to me so I can execute on it. They can just say it, and then I can translate it into tasks, conditions, standards, whatever needs to have happen in a much quicker way than a sole integrator.
Oh, that makes sense, being able to do that. Okay, this absolutely fascinates me that it's less than 5% and you researched and found that. So I happen to score and this doesn't surprise me, a lot of like that. When I took it again, I mean, I had taken it before, but I think they had us take it again in March. And I was a 93 and an 83. So not quite as high, but I was like, I don't remember at the time being that, you know, when I took it before, I wasn't as involved in this. And I keep taking it like you did. I keep taking it every few months thinking this has got to be wrong. And I have a ton of integrator skills from having the dance studio, big event planning, having to put the things into process and give people the details. And I am good at it. I just don't like it anymore. It makes me. So this last time I took it about a month ago, because as we're working on projects and JC and I and Pat are working on sales boost, I keep having to be the, they'll probably listen to this, in the integrator role, and it makes me crabby. Like, I'm like, I don't like being in the integrator. So I have that. I see what you say. Like, I'm not like them. I'm not like a lot of visionaries who have the, not inability, but they really strong visionary and don't have as much of the ability to translate that, to put it into projects, to translate it to people. I have the ability, I just don't like it.
Yeah. I think business ownership stretches us in both categories. Like, if you're a primary integrator, when you start your business, you stretch yourself. If you're willing to do the work, you'll stretch yourself a bit as a visionary. Like, what do I actually want besides just revenue? Right? Like, how much revenue, you know, what do I, you know, so you stretch yourself on that end. Whereas the high visionary, you know, when they start their business, it's usually just them, and they have to stretch themselves into an integrator role if they're willing to do the work. Do I think they flip-flop? Probably not. And I think they, whichever one that they stretch themselves into is the one they tire of most quickly. Mm-hmm. And you have to nuance the integrator visionary thing. So there's a really good tool out there called understand.me. You can go there and you can make your own profile. And it's really cool. If you want to take a look at it, you can go to understand.me/Eric Kelly. That's my whole personality profile across, I believe, 5 personality tests. And it doesn't reference the integrator visionary one at all, but there's Clifton Strengths and the DISC. And what's really interesting is if you start to correlate them and you dive deep into them, one of the interesting, I'm a very high D, so people would think super high visionary. Totally true. But in my Clifton Strengths, I love winning and I love achieving a goal. So I'm actually willing to suffer integrator stuff in order to accomplish a task, right? So my high D, normally high Ds burn out on tasks because they just want to get things done. But one of my big strengths in my Clifton Strengths is goal accomplishment. So I'm willing to embrace the suck just to get the goal. So it's really interesting when you really dive into all of those and start correlating them between each other. It's a lot of fun.
I can't wait. Now I'm obsessed with this because I love Gallup Strengths, and I have a lot of visionary ones in there, of futuristic, strategic. Strategic, I guess, crosses between, but my top Gallup strength is maximizer.
Okay.
Which has visionary tendencies. My particular description of it is taking things from good to great. So, you know, seeing a vision of taking things and making them bigger. But I also thrive, even though I think I hate being an integrator right now, in, like you said, getting stuff done to reach the goal. Like, I want to win. And any wins during the day, like, I still use paper. And I love crossing things off. Like, I won today because I crossed, you know, I got to throw all these pieces of paper away because I did it all.
It's a hit of dopamine for people like us. Like, having a manual to-do list, and I have a digital one too for our organization, but even just like using monday.com and seeing it hit done and the little confetti goes off, I'm like, that's right, we did that.
Oh. Confetti goes off. I don't use Monday.
Yeah, it's a little widget on Monday.com. When you change the task from working on it to done, it goes within the box. So gratifying.
I'm going to have to switch to that. It's funny, even just the checkbox of digital list. Like JC, we have a just a shared note. on different things, right? Or like things that need done in different tasks or even a grocery list. And I just listed them and then could delete them. And I didn't think of, he's like, can you please make the list so that they have the circle by that, by them so that, you know, you can put the little color in the circle. I'm like, oh, that is so gratifying.
It really is. Like, I like keeping a manual notepad now, and my notes are really messy, but being able to go, just take that pen and scratch it out, you're like, yeah, you get really excited.
It is exciting. That's a win for me in a day when I can scratch them all off. And then my biggest thing is when things are done on the piece of paper, I rip it and throw it away. All done. This is awesome. I'm excited to check out Understand Me and check out.
Yeah. Understand.me. That's the, so it's .me is the end of the website.
Okay. And like you said, all of them together, because I think we get stuck sometimes in the one or in the other. A lot of people, you know, dive all in to the DISC personality when they're working employees or something. And it really is all of them together. Like you said, DISC, your Clifton strengths, even in the workplace, your love language, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the tests.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Every one of our employees does it when they hire on here, because think of it like one of those pictures that you create in layers. You can kind of see what's going on, and then you put another layer on. You're like, oh, I get a little bit more now. Now a little bit more. Now a little bit more. Now a little bit more. And it allows you to understand at a way more nuanced level organizationally. You know, if you're doing nothing in your business, I know there's a lot of people that probably listen to this that are like, one guy on a truck and a helper, and you're like, I don't even have time for that. I would say just do one. I wouldn't do the most robust one that takes an hour, Clifton Strengths. Just employee love language. When you affirm an employee and what they did well, figure out how they appreciate that. And that's like the easiest thing for you to implement. Remember, like, implementation starts at the lowest level. It's not the, doesn't give you the greatest result necessarily, but it gives you a result that you can then build on.
Yes. And if you're not familiar with love languages, it is quick. Your team can take it fast, and it makes a huge difference just in the appreciation. Like you said, you might be giving them tons of compliments and praise and think that's it, and they are a person that receives love through gifts. And if you would have just given them a $5 Starbucks gift card and said that job well done with the $5 gift card, that would have went way more. Your words are just going over their head.
Totally.
Or the other way around. You can think you gave them a gift card and you didn't need to spend any money on them. They wanted to go to lunch with you.
Yep. Yep. So. And there's always the inverse of that. If their love language is words of affirmation, when you tell them they did a good job, if you want to correct them, they're going to listen to, hey, we need to talk about this, right? Mm-hmm. Where someone motivated by gifts, it's like, hey, you didn't get your bonus this month because of X. You know, you tie it to how they feel appreciated, and then you have to show them how they missed the mark. Obviously, that's good leadership, but when you can do it in the same way. So if their rewards are tied to gifts, their correction is tied to not getting the gift and explaining to them why they fell short, you know?
I love that too. All right, we have to take our second commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Creating art from darkness. For over 20 years, Cast Lighting has designed and manufactured the world's most durable, energy-efficient, and technically advanced landscape lighting products available at astonishingly affordable prices. Cast offers an all-encompassing line of products with everything you need to get the job done. Cast Landscape, their most durable product, is best-in-class, low-voltage landscape lighting made of solid bronze with integrated and drop-in LED technology. These fixtures are built to endure the most demanding environments. Source Lighting, a new division by Cast, is your source for professional grand landscape lighting made of durable brass, offering both integrated and drop-in LED technology, and backed by Cast, the world's most durable outdoor lighting. Cast Lighting gives you innovative, state-of-the-art, old-world craftsmanship with tomorrow's technology. Visit their website at cast-lighting.com today. That's cast-lighting.com.
From the East Coast to the West Coast and around the world, no one rocks like Turfs Up Radio. Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station.
Cr- Cress is leading the transition from gas-powered lawn equipment for professional operations with the introduction of the industry's first truly game-changing innovation in battery-powered OPE. With the Cress 8-Minute Cyber System, professional landscapers can now replace their messy gas-powered equipment without sacrificing performance, power, or runtime. The 8-Minute Cyber System allows for Cress-made 60-volt batteries to fully charge in 8 minutes or less, just enough time for a water break. Complemented by a full line of equipment benchmarked against gas-powered products, landscapers can finally take charge of their business and make the switch to battery. For more information, visit Cress.com. Visit Cress.com. Having issues with your maintenance schedule? Want better routing and ability to track your vehicles when they leave the shop? Do you want to reduce your liability exposure with your vehicles that are moving billboards on the road? GPS Fleet Consulting uses cloud-based dash cam monitoring and can easily track your vehicle maintenance using real odometer readings. GPS Fleet Consulting can also assist you with live phone support and email support with guaranteed same-day responses. Yes, same-day responses. Stop wondering where your trucks are and start managing your fleet with GPS Fleet Management Systems. For more information, visit gpsfleetconsulting.com. That's gpsfleetconsulting.com.
And we're back. Okay, in our last segment, I love all that on personality. I learned so much just myself, so I know that the audience did. On the last segment, I just want to go through some things. Might get into courage, but first, you obviously are very intentional about your life. Like very intent. You've talked about really learning intentionally about parenting and being a good parent, and are intentional about. So many people live their life on autopilot. Even business owners. We started the business, and we somehow just got in this pattern, and we're just living most of our life on autopilot, going right ahead. And you obviously, like I said, live intentionally and then make big decisions. You decided to do 3.0 and do something different and intentional with your life. So let's talk about some things in that, some things that you do intentionally to lead yourself well, where it all begins before you can lead other people, what you do intentionally to lead yourself well.
I talk to myself a lot. I'm a very intellectual person, and I like to think. And what I had to start doing was, if I was doing something that really didn't bring me any value, I would ask myself, well, why am I doing this? Well, because I like it. And I would have to go five layers deep on myself. I always go, so why? And so someone will say, I want to do this because, you go, okay, why? And then they say the reason behind the reason. You go, okay, why? Reason behind the reason behind the reason. You can get about five layers deep. And that's the most profound thing you can do. So the minute you identify something in your life that you don't like, including your own business, like part of my journey out of owning a home service business was I was pretty much at the place where I was not happy anymore. I had some really poor personnel things happen, and I had just gotten to the point where I was like, I don't know if this makes me happy anymore. And I was like, well, why doesn't it make you happy? Well, because of this. Okay, what's the reason behind the reason behind the reason? And when you identify that, you're left with two options. You've gotten to the actual reason, and you go, okay, so am I going to continue in what I'm doing that doesn't make me happy, or am I going to find something else? You don't just stop doing something. Right? Because sometimes you need to do the thing. Sometimes it's something unhealthy, like how we eat or how we drink or those different things. It's a very simple answer. But then there's times that it's more nuanced than that, and you have to figure out a way out of it, right? So, but sometimes people go, well, I don't like that I don't have a morning routine, right? Because they think they need one, when really they're mad that they're just not more successful, and they think it's their habits doing it to them. And then it's okay, well, what habits is it? Well, I'm not setting an alarm. Ah, so there's one thing in this big problem that you can do, right? So you have to get really granular, and you have to be completely honest with yourself And the minute you're not honest with yourself, you might as well stop the whole exercise because you're going to keep on doing what you're going to do.
So that's something, okay, this is, I'm going to dive into you, but this is one of the things I appreciate about you now that you say this, because in conversations, in deep conversations, you don't let a person stop. It's not, the answer isn't. So as I was considering things and yeah, considering whether it be a change or considering things in business and life, you don't let it stop at why, which most people do. You're like, well, yeah. I'm not sure. I think I want to go in that direction. Oh, that's great. Or I'm not sure why I'm scared about this or not leaning into it. And you do that in conversation. So
I've done it with you in March, you know, because I fully expect the first, this is going to sound really cold about how I view people, but I think as humans, we're naturally protective. So when I meet someone, I'm going to naturally believe that the first answer they give me is a lie or an untruth. They're two different things. Yeah. So then you have, if you really care about them and you want to help them, you have to press at least one level deeper, right? And then maybe give some value and see if they'll go a level deeper. They might not, but typically the first answer is the same answer that we've been telling ourselves, which has left us stuck. And that's our safe answer.
So I like that you gave untruth, because it's probably not that I'm intentionally lying to you. I'm just telling you the story that I'm telling myself. And it so naturally comes out. And
most we're always telling a story to ourselves.
Most people buy that story, but you, I mean, you have this gift. And I think I'm like at layer four in, and all of a sudden I'm looking back like, you know, you get to the place of like, am I even telling myself this? Is this true? It is true. Like, it's such an uncovering those layers that it's vulnerable to even do with yourself. But you're a phenomenal coach at that, of getting people to, you know, pass the level of lying to yourself when you don't know that you are.
Think about it this way. I like to tell people, everybody's in a story. The difference is are you an extra, a supporting actor, or the main character? And most people go through life with the story that they've been given, and they think they're the actor when they're really an extra, especially people that have like been following what society tells them from, you know, school all through into their adult years. They've been told what they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to do, go out and get a good job, buy a house, have some kids, you know, like, there's a level of programming that I believe is out there, and that's, you're in a story. It's your story, but somehow you ended up as an extra. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen it where I do that with people, and they get to about the fourth layer and they just go, oh, and they say it out loud because somewhere in their head, they actually believe it. They've just never pressed themselves to think that deep. And sometimes, especially when you do it with yourself, you can get to a really ugly answer about yourself. Like, it almost horrifies you about what you tell yourself, but it's the truth, you know? And the more people are able to do that in both life and business, it's like, okay, why is my business not working? Well, it's because of this. And they go, well, okay, you know, take some ownership. Who allowed that to happen? Well, this person that I empowered. Okay, who empowered them? I did. Okay, now we're getting a little bit closer to what's actually happening here, right? And people just aren't taught to do that. They, and usually it comes from, you know, being told or getting coached in it, or a lot of it is, a lot of people can't get out of the extra mode because they come out of college and their mindset is fixed, right? And they develop a growth mindset, and that's when you can start, you know, learning and growing. You know, trauma really does it to people as well. You know, trauma experiences will do that to people, and because it forces you to reframe how you view everything, right? But people just don't do this. People don't talk like this. People don't do this, but it's the thing that actually gets you to the heart of the matter faster. And the faster you can get to the truth, you know, and I hate the red pill analogy because it's been totally co-opted, but it's true. Like, you can either get to the truth quick and be done, or you can continue living the life that you're living. It is that simple, but sometimes it takes being told that you're in this programming and this and that. And, you know, and you know, it's unfortunate that that whole analogy has been co-opted, because it was beautiful at the time before it's, you know, was co-opted, but it is still true fundamentally.
Yeah. The quicker, that you can get to the truth, and people just aren't seeing, they just aren't asking the right questions, that they aren't seeing it. They aren't willing to dig deep. And I really think I'm normally this out of the box thinker, that I do work on myself, that I think of things, that I talk about, you make the rules. There aren't, you know, you're the one that makes the rules. Who told you that was a rule? You get stuck in it, in your own story. And that was in, you know, conversation with you. I could see that when you're like, well, why do you think that? You get stuck in a story that you can only do it this way, or you only have option A, B, C, not A through Z. Not like you, you can completely go a different direction. There are no rules. Who told you that?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, you have to be really careful and humble when you do that, because you go, there is no rules. Well, yeah, there's still laws of nature and laws of man, but it's good if you're humble enough to take the answer that you got and go, huh, wow. And, you know, Tony Robbins says it takes, people will say, oh, it took me 10 years to change. No, it changed the moment you decided. Change happens in an instant. It just took you 10 years to get to that decision point. The reality is too many people spend too much time focusing on the surface level of the problem that they're facing, instead of going down, 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 down. To get, the quicker you can get to the bottom of the mine and harvest all the gold, the quicker you're on to the next mine.
Man, there is a lot of depth in that. You're exactly right. I mean, you got to the heart of this. You started it by it. Exactly what most people do. They take this surface level, like, I'm stuck, I'm going to change my habits and daily routines, and I'm just going to fix this surface level. If I start, and I talk about this all the time, and it is all important, but not unless you're pairing it with the deep work. But people think they can put a band-aid on it and do the same solution what somebody else is doing, that working out for 30 minutes in the morning, journaling, meditating, and then that'll be fixed. They're just going to fix this top level thing and do what the other person is doing.
It's putting a dressing on a gangrenous wound.
Yeah. And when, no matter how much you do that or how fit you are, you're in the greatest shape, you're doing all these things, if you still hate your business, if you are still doing stuff in your business that you don't like, you're still not going to like your business.
Yep.
And until you've asked those deep questions, like you said, the real five, you've probably told yourself a story about what you don't like in your business that isn't true.
Yep.
You're believing what somebody else, you know, you might say you don't like these tasks in your business because you heard that on a show that you're not supposed to do those tasks. And it's different for each and every person.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's hard though when you're, most people don't like to go down that road because they're scared they might find out something about themselves that they don't really want to deal with, right? And really hard, really hard for them, because they know where they might be going and they're like, yeah, I'm just going to back away from that. You know, even in personal stuff, it's like, I know I need to work out, but I don't like to work out because of this. So I'm not even going to go there. I'm just going to do Atkins and be good with it. You know what I mean?
Well, as I can't believe we have to, that the show is coming to an end and we're wrapping up, because I could talk about all these things forever with you and just learn about myself. But before we go into a deep dive of Angela and I uncover some more things on a live show, what would your advice be? And then we'll get into one thing uncomfortable, but people don't, how do they do that? I think a lot of people are working with the wrong, I mean, I didn't intend to say this, but a lot of people are working with the wrong coaches or wrong, they aren't asking these deep questions. So if someone wants to do this and really wants to get into that, what would you suggest?
I honestly wouldn't send them anywhere. Fundamentally, when it comes to who I listen to the most and who I get coached by, I believe it's like a master and an apprentice. You don't become a master baker by apprenticing with a blacksmith. So I don't take business advice from anybody that's never owned a business. That's a rule of thumb I have. If you've never owned a business, whether it succeeded or failed in your cycling, I don't care. But if you've never owned a business, I will not, I'll listen, I won't be rude, but I will not take business advice from you. Now, if you say, I heard this in a book, I'll go read the book, right? Because more than likely they've been a business owner. So that's the first thing I would say. Anybody that's giving you non-gestalt advice, you need to be really wary of that. Now, there is licensed professionals out there for certain things. So, you know, you don't, that there is a caveat to that. But for generalized self-improvement type stuff, think of it as a master and an apprentice. That's the first thing with coaching. And then the second thing is, don't try and change everything all at once. Too many people go, I got to change my diet, my exercise, I got to quit drinking, eat healthy, fix my business, think of a new venture idea, give to my local charity, I got to join the Rotary Club, and they try and do it all at once. You're not going to do it. Pick one thing. You know, you can knock down a wall through 1,000 BBs or one big cannonball. But you have multiple walls. Everybody views all their bad habits and the things they don't like as one big wall, when really it's a bunch of little walls. And so you want to hit them one at a time, and you want to grow your area in spaces and spheres, and then you'll have strength because you can build repetition and build time for it and those sorts of things. So that's what I would say about that. Always try and follow a master. That means someone that's been doing it longer than you. That doesn't mean they have to be over 60 with, you know, gray hair and been doing it for 40 years, but someone that is ahead of you. And then think of all the things that you need to do in order of priority, what's most important to you and what is most important to your livelihood, i.e. money in the bank. It might be good for you to get up and work out for 3 hours a day and buy meal prep and have a personal trainer. But if your money, if your company's not making revenue, that's probably your biggest problem, you know?
Exactly. Oh, goodness, Eric. Well, I, like I said, I learned so much. So I know you brought so much value to the audience because I have a ton to digest. And wow. So thank you for all of that. We leave each show. We all know that growth happens outside of our comfort zone. And so with a call to action to the viewers of what is one thing this week you need to do to get uncomfortable. So we'll each answer the question first. And so I'm going to start with you. What is one thing you need to do this week to get uncomfortable?
Well, it's funny you said that because my team and I set out on kind of a goal setting challenge from now until the end of the quarter. And this is the first week. So we literally started yesterday. We didn't start Monday because we had the meeting Monday. But for me, mine's really weird because I look like I'm pretty much in shape, right? I am a shape for sure. But what people don't realize is November 2nd of last year, I was almost 300 pounds and I went to the hospital in the middle of the night thinking I was having a heart attack. I've owned a gym. I was in the military. I've cycled from fat to fit probably 8 times in my life. For me, getting down to a manageable, healthy weight is not a problem. But it was sitting in that hospital room thinking I was going to die and not see my kids again. And I had my business interests and I wasn't even thinking about that. So over the course of the last year, on and off, I've lost 60 pounds and everyone would be like, oh, that's amazing. You, and people say like, oh, you look great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've always wanted to go to excellence. So I set out this week that, by January the 9th, I'm going to be 10 to 12% body fat. Ooh. I've never achieved that in my life. But that is going to make me so, I'm literally only eating chicken breast, rice, and broccoli for my meals. I'm not drinking. I'm getting up and working out extremely hard, which I'd already been doing, but it takes an extra level of discipline. So like I'm putting myself into an uncomfortable zone for the next like 3 months. So not just this week, but this is the first week where I'm building the habits. So I'm meal prepping. I'm, you know, reordering my habits, and it's going to push me way past my comfort zone because working out is not uncomfortable to me. Diet, extreme proper eating is hard for me, you know? Yeah. So that's where I'm going.
Wow. I'm excited to watch this journey. And that is uncomfortable because it's uncomfortable. It's not just one uncomfortable act. Like you are putting yourself out there. You've told us, the audience, you've told your team, like, I am doing this. Mm-hmm. And you have to step into that behavior each and every day to months out. So I'm excited to watch the journey. So the one thing, I usually don't have something planned. Sometimes I do, and then sometimes I let it inspire me. And so my uncomfortable thing that I'm going to do is this five layers deep. I have a couple things that that I know I need to ask myself that question of, but why? But why are you thinking that? Like, this isn't just a little problem that you need to solve. So I'm going to be real, real vulnerable. It's probably because I didn't want to look at it in those areas. And so I'm going to get 5 layers deep.
Good for you. Going vulnerable with yourself is incredibly hard because we lie to ourselves more than anybody.
Yep.
And I would say to you and to everybody that does that exercise, don't do it where you can get distracted. Go for a walk, go away for the weekend, sit in a hotel room, whatever you have to do, because you have to get away from all distractions. Like when I try this exercise, if the TV's nearby or my phone, it ain't happening.
Nope.
You know,
I'm not diving in. I'm not going to sit in that. I'm going to do anything to get away from sitting in it. So, well, thank you again, Eric, so much for being
here.
You're
welcome.
Love every moment in your energy. So I'm so appreciative of your time. Thank you for all of you listening on Terps Up Radio on Facebook. Don't forget to continue to download, subscribe, and share. We'll see you next week.